I trust that you have come prepared to hear the Word of God. And I hope that you will get your books out and your notepads and pencils, and that you would pay attention to the Word that is going to be given to you. I know that our brother, as your pastor, feels a great responsibility. And I know that he's strived to prepare himself for this day, and that the Lord could use him as an instrument in his own hand. And so I pray that you would pay attention and that you would get that message that the Lord has for you tonight. Your pastor and our brother, Bob Hedrick.
Thank you, Joel. Good evening. It's good to be here, and glad to see everyone that has made the effort tonight. I do have some thoughts I'd like to express to you, and I hope that they'll be edifying to you, strengthening you in your walk. I would like to begin tonight reading out of the Gospel of Mark. To set the stage for my thoughts tonight. First chapter of Mark, and I'm going to start with the 21st verse. A little background. This is right at the beginning of Jesus Christ's ministry. He's a brand new minister, if you will. He's just been baptized. He's called a couple of individuals, Simon and Andrew, that were by the Sea of Galilee, and they were following him. And it's very early in his ministry. And the 21st verse says, "And they went into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day he entered into the synagogue and taught." Capernaum is a town that was on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. It was a fishing village. It was more than a village. It was a pretty good-sized town. It was the main town on the north side of the Sea of Galilee. There were lots of little villages out and about, but Capernaum was really one of the big hubs for that area. So it was a good-sized, it wasn't like it was a small, teeny-tiny village. It was a pretty good-sized city. So just to put that in your frame so you can have a visual image about this story. But so they go into Capernaum, and it's the Sabbath. So what do you do on the Sabbath? They went to the synagogue. And continuing on, he taught. "And they were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one that had authority, and not as the scribes. And there was one in their synagogue, a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, saying, 'Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee, who thou art, the Holy One of God.' And Jesus rebuked him, saying, 'Hold thy peace, and come out of him.' And when the unclean spirit had torn him and cried with a loud voice, he came out of him." Everybody have a picture of that? Can you imagine sitting here in the Church of Christ on a Saturday or a Sunday evening at a preaching service, and someone that you're sitting next to hops up and starts saying in a strange voice, "Let us alone. What have we to do with ye? I know you're Jesus of Nazareth. Have you come to torment us?" What would be in your mind? You'd be just a little bit shocked. Okay, for the last 20 years, I've been coming to Sabbath or to the synagogue on the Sabbath, and the scribe gets up there and he reads, and I agree with him every time, and you know it's the same old thing every week. But this one was just a little bit different. Like I said, this is very early in his ministry. So continuing on, verse 20 says, "And they were all amazed." Well, yeah. "Insomuch that they questioned among themselves, saying, 'What thing is this? What new doctrine is this? For with authority he commandeth he even the unclean spirits, and they do obey him.' And immediately his fame spread abroad throughout all the region round about Galilee." This was something that kind of got people's attention. It was on CNN that night, if you will, that the events that occurred in that synagogue were shocking. They were unusual. Here was a man who came in and taught with authority. And right there in front of me, he cast out a devil. You know, and there were witnesses in that synagogue that saw everything. Okay? So at the end of the service, you know, they close the service and everybody goes their separate ways. What's it like here after a service? Everybody sits and talks. Yada, 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 yada. Can you imagine what it was like that night? Would it be, it was on everybody's mind. It was incredible. But the story doesn't end there. And it says, and forthwith, I'm thinking that means after that. And when they were come out of the synagogue, they entered in the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. So after the Sabbath, you go have dinner, right? When you guys go home from church, you just kind of relax. You spend a whole day in church, you know, having a preaching service or a song service, different services throughout the day. Some people stay here all day and just fellowship. And at the end of the day, the sun goes down. It's like, whew, what a day. That was a full day. Well, this one was even fuller. So they did like everybody else. After the church service, they went to a friend's house and they were going to have some supper. But Simon's wife's mother, his mother-in-law, sick of a fever. And anon, they tell him of her. So they, as soon as he gets there, they tell him about her. And he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up. And immediately the fever left her, and she ministered unto them. This is right at the beginning of his ministry. So they go into this guy's house, and his mother-in-law is sick, and he heals her. And at even, when the sun did set, that brought him all that were diseased and them that were possessed with devils. Remember, this is the Sabbath. Sabbath wasn't over until the sun went down. So as soon as the sun goes down, what happens? Everybody's saying, huh, I think I know something I can, you know, that I have a friend who's sick. I have a friend who, or a relative who's possessed of a devil. I'm sure of it. Whatever their reasons were, it's like, okay, you know, the sun's set now. I'm going over to Simon's house. And it says, all the city was gathered together at the door. Capernaum was not a three-house or three-horse town. It was a good-sized city. So picture in your mind how you feel at the end of a day at church. Pretty full. You've fellowshipped all day long, and you go home, you eat some supper, and the sun goes down, and then the whole city is at your front door. You think he was just a little bit busy? And he healed many that were sick of diverse diseases and cast out many devils and suffered not the devils to speak because they knew him. So all these people, the whole city is at his door. He takes each one and heals them. So if they came after sundown, what time do you think they got done? I don't know. But safe to say that at the end of the day, if you can picture Jesus Christ having spent the whole day in Sabbath at the synagogue and then going home and then having the whole town at his front door, he was pretty wiped out. Can you imagine, you ever have to just crawl into bed? You're so exhausted. I have a feeling that's probably what he was like. Remember, this is right at the very beginning of his ministry. The very beginning. But I guess what I want to get across to you today is that sometimes in our life, do you ever just feel like that? That you're just exhausted. You fall in bed, and before your head is the pillow, you're asleep. Or you lie there saying, where did the day go? You know, I woke up this morning and then I ran all day long. I was chasing my tail, and now I'm exhausted and I'm going to bed. I feel that sometimes. I don't know about you, but I know I do. And I look at, you know, I get home, and at the front door, I don't have the whole city of Phoenix at my front door wanting to be healed, but I have these burdens that I feel like I'm supposed to be taking care of. I've got an unfinished house that has projects after projects after projects that I feel like, you know, every time you walk through the house, like, you know what, I got to fix that. And you never do, but it's always hanging there. And then, you know, I was supposed to get the oil changed how many months ago? Several months ago. Well, you know, I just haven't got around to it yet. You know, and I got work, and then there's school, and, you know, and then, or like some of us are homeschooled, but, you know, you get up and you get up in the morning and you get breakfast and you start school, and sometimes, let's say that the pupils are not at their best, and you work all day, and then, you know, well, then in the middle of that, you got to eat. And well, somebody has to prepare that, and somebody's got to do the cooking, and well, somebody's got to actually shop to go get the stuff, to go cook the stuff so you can eat. And then you get to listen to them complain about it. You know, yeah, I see, Cody, you're nodding. Do you ever feel that way? You just, no matter how, the harder I work, the more tired I am, the farther behind I get. Well, I think that that's something that Christ was kind of probably feeling that way. He was probably worn out. But, you know, it's very close to, instead of us running our own life, life circumstances dictate how we live our life. And that's a very uncomfortable and it's not a good way to live your life. You know, it's, well, I was talking to Joel about this. I run my life by deadlines. The project I'm working on right now is the one that has the first deadline. You know, that's not the most efficient way of doing it. So I think we all can understand that fatigue, that worn out feeling. And I think that was probably what Christ felt. But Christ did something interesting. Continuing on in the story. And in the morning, rising up a great while before day. So he was up half the night healing people. And then he gets up before the sun comes up. He went out and departed into a solitary place and there prayed. You know, he wasn't in that house by himself. He had all those guys that were with him. But he took some time, and he got up early, and he went out, found a quiet place, and prayed. Doesn't say what he prayed, but he prayed. He talked to his Father. And continuing on, and Simon and they that were with him followed after him, And when they had found him, they said unto him, all men seek for thee. And he said unto them, let us go into the next towns, that I may preach there also. For therefore came I forth. And he preached in their synagogues throughout all Galilee. Here comes, you know, Christ had gotten up early in the morning before the rest of his followers and gone off into the solitary place to pray, and they tracked him down. They found him. He says, hey, we got a whole bunch of more people at my house that need to be healed. They love you. Come back. Do some more. But what did Christ say? He basically said, no. I got to go to these other towns. It wasn't his purpose to heal every sick person or everyone that had a devil. That wasn't his job. If you look over in John, the 17th chapter, somewhere, real quick, like in the fourth verse, he's talking to his father. Says, I have glorified thee on the earth. I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. You know, when he was saying those words, there were still sick people on this earth. There were still people that had devils within them. There were still people that were unconverted. He didn't convert everyone. But he fulfilled what God had put him on earth to do. And that's, I think, the key to our busy life, is taking a step back and saying, okay, what of all the things that I'm doing is the most important? Why am I here? You know, it's funny. Some of us here have started reading the Purpose-Driven Life, which is a fine book, I guess, for those people who don't have the Book of Mormon. Because when we were going through it, you know, it was basically saying a bunch of the same things in the Book of Mormon about why we're here. We started getting immersed in the things we think we have to do. In reality, it's simply a choice. This is a time of probation. But you know, Christ wasn't the only one who made that kind of a decision. In the Book of Mormon, in Alma, in the second chapter, there's another individual who made a similar choice. A little background about this guy. Man's name was Alma. And he was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, if you will. He was in charge of the judges that ran the country. And he also happened to be the high priest of the church. So he had this very, I'm sure it paid well, being the chief judge. There was a lot of perks that went along with it. He's a very powerful man. But he also carried that burden of the responsibilities to his nation as a judge and his responsibilities to the church as a high priest. And after he'd been the high priest, or excuse me, he'd been the chief judge for 8 years, problems started coming into the people. Actually, the ninth year. In the 22nd verse, and now it came to pass that Alma, having seen the afflictions of the humble followers of God and the persecutions which were heaped upon them by the remainder of his people, seeing all their inequality, he began to be very sorrowful. Nevertheless, the Spirit of the Lord did not fail him. And he selected a wise man, which is among the elders of the church, and gave him power according to the voice of the people, that he might have power to enact laws according to the laws which were given, and to put them in force according to the wickedness and the crimes of the people. Now this man's name was Nephiha, and he was appointed chief judge, and he sat in the judgment seat to judge and to govern the people. Now Amon did not grant him unto him the office of being a high priest over the church, but he retained the office of high priest unto himself. But he delivered the judgment seat unto Nephiha. And this he did, that he himself might go forth among his people, or among the people of Nephi, that he might preach the word of God unto them, to stir them up in remembrance of their duty, that he might pull down by the word of God all the pride and craftiness and all the contentions which were among his people, seeing no way that he might reclaim them, save it were in bearing down in pure testimony against them. And thus in the commencement of the ninth year of the reign of the judges over the people of Nephi, Alma delivered up the judgment seat to Nephiha and confined himself wholly to the high priesthood of the holy order of God, to the testimony of the word, according to the spirit of revelation and prophecy. Alma was saying, no, I can't do it. I can't do both jobs. Because, you know, it's everybody knows who Pavarotti is? Big Italian tenor, I think he is. Singer. Very famous in the world. I'm not sure if any of your opera fans are here. But he has an interesting story. When he was a young man, he had a choice. He said, he went to his father. You know, he was looking for some direction in his life. Obviously he had talent. He had talent. And he had skill. But he didn't know what to do with it. He went to his dad and he says, you know what, should I be a musician? Should I be a performer? Or should I be a teacher? Which one should I do? And he said his father made an interesting statement. He says, if you try to sit in two chairs, you fall in between them. You can't sit on two chairs. You have to pick one and make it your primary focus. Well, he chose to become a performer. And it wasn't right away. It took him 7 years from when he started till he got his first professional appearance. And another 7 years after that, before he played at the Metropolitan Opera in New York or wherever that is. But it was when he said, okay, I'm not even going to try and worry about being a teacher. I'm going to focus on being a musician. I'm going to focus on performing. And it worked out well for him. But I think a lot of times we try to juggle everything all at once. I'm going to be this, and I'm going to be that, and I'm going to be this, and I can juggle with my foot. In reality, we can't. If we can do it, we can't do each job to its best. I think that's what Alma was doing. He was saying, you know what, I can't juggle being both the chief judge and also the high priest. I got to do which one is more important. And he chose being a high priest. That was his purpose. That was the most important thing in his life. I think this is particularly hard on women. Because I see a society that says, yes, you can be a brain surgeon and a mom, and you know, I can do everything a man can do and give birth. And there's a lot of societal pressure to be out there and be successful at life, not just work in the work field, but to be very driven. And you're not representing the sisters well if you don't, you know, succeed and excel at everything. But at the same time, you either become a very talented and dedicated surgeon, or you become a very talented and dedicated mom. But you can't do both to the highest degree of effectiveness. You have to decide which one is more important, and that's a very great burden on our ladies. But for us men as well, it's no different. That there is a certain status, a certain expectation, that as long as you're working, you should be striving to get higher in the company, if you will, to promote. Well, with every promotion comes greater responsibilities. And greater responsibilities take greater time. The headaches get bigger. And you have to ask yourself, well, wait a minute. Is this really what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? Or is this just a distraction, basically? Sometimes we have to say no. We have to simplify things. Focus on what's important. Continuing on in the story about Alma, when you jump over into the sixth chapter, the fifth chapter is basically his speech to the was actually his workings when he first started going back out in the field. And the first verse of the sixth chapter says that now it came to pass that Alma returned from the land of Gideon after having taught the people of Gideon many things which cannot be written, having established the order of the church according as he had done before in the land of Zarahemla. Yea, he returned to his own house in Zarahemla to rest himself from the labors which he had performed. And thus ended the ninth year of the reign of the judges of the people of Nephi. Yeah, he went out and worked, but then he realized, you know, you have to rest. You have to rest from your labors. You know, in I think it's Matthew. Matthew 11th chapter. Verse. Come unto me, all ye that labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You know, that's what we have on the seal of our church. He says, come unto me and rest. It's important. It's important to set aside that time to rest. So how do you do that? It's a lot like tithing. When you decide to, you know what, when you make a decision, you know what, I'm going to start tithing. How do you start? Anybody? Huh? First thing. What do you mean? Okay. What's the first thing that comes out when you get paid? Okay. How about if you get your paycheck and you pay all your bills, and then when you have on the months when you have some left over, then you give that money for tithing. Will that be successful? No. It's the same way with our daily life. You know what? I guarantee you get up in the morning and you got a whole slew of things that you got to get done that day. And then at the end of the day, well, you know what? I didn't have enough time today. I'll have to catch up with you, Lord, tomorrow. Or, you know what? You try and figure out, well, I might be able to get 15 minutes. No, it's something different. It has to be a decision ahead of time just to either get up earlier or set aside some time during the day that is God's to rest. You know, this episode here in Mark that we were talking about with Christ, it wasn't the first time that he had, the only time that he ever, you know, took a break. Oftentimes, throughout the Scripture, you know, it says that he went alone, off by himself to pray. He needed that. You know, when you're continuing on from this point, as he's going out and preaching in Galilee, he goes through all these towns and there was a leper that comes out to him and he heals him and tells him not to tell anybody, but he goes back and tells everybody. And it got to the point where he could not enter a city in Galilee. He had to stay out in the desert. And people came from him to him from everywhere. And he went down by the sea, went back into Capernaum, and you know, as soon as he went back, you know, well, everybody showed up. And that's the story of when it was so crowded in the house they had to lower the guy through the roof. You know, people were taking his energy, his time, you know, constantly, every waking moment was, can you heal this person? Can you, you know, pray for this person? I know you can do it. Would you please heal this person? Cast this devil out all day long. It got to the point where, you know, he sat on the seashore and he had to leave in a boat to get some time. But he did it. Sometimes we have to do that. Have to schedule some time. In Mark, in the second chapter, they get after him for going through the cornfields and picking some corn and eating it with his followers. And he makes a statement that I think is important. 27th verse says, "And he said unto them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath." You know, God in his infinite wisdom, he knows, you know what? The human body, the human mind needs a break. You know, I find it interesting. The French Revolution. Ah, the French. You know, when they had their revolution in France. Well, that's where they would have the French Revolution, wouldn't it? Here's your sign. You know, they rebelled against everything. They rebelled against the king and the aristocracy and the church and everything that was anything. They rebelled against it because they were French. I don't know. Rebelled against bathing, I think. But some of the things that they instituted, you know, they're the ones that came up with the metric system. And what a curse that's been for everybody, but that's another story. You know, because, well, if you make it all 10 and it's easier to keep track of, it's more universal, you know, and how wonderful it is. Well, you know what? They tried to do that with the days of the week. You know, they outlawed the 7-day week and made it a 10-day week. And there was no Sundays or Saturdays. There was no day off. It was just 10 days, and then he started another 10 days, and he started another 10 days. They outlawed the Sabbath. It was illegal to take the day off. You know what happened to their society? It destroyed itself. It ground into the... It just collapsed. Because God knew when he created us that we need a Sabbath. We need a rest. We need a break from our labors. And they call that the period of the Enlightenment. But that's another story. So we need to set aside this time. And remind me, what did Christ do when he got away from it all? What did he do? He prayed. Unfortunately, this is what I do. You know, I get home from work, or I've been out working on the yard or whatever, exhausted. Or I get back to the office at the fire station, and it's been a long day. And this is, how many of you do this? Click. Ever do that? Click. Click. That's not a Sabbath. That is not rest. That's a distraction. Because spiritually, you're still fighting the battle because there's nothing good coming out of that TV that's edifying you. How do you feel after a reunion or after hopefully after a preaching service or even a worship service on a Wednesday night? Hopefully, the purpose is you feel renewed. You know, you come in with lots of cares and burdens and everything else, but you kind of get some strength and you refocus your mind. Okay? How do you feel after watching an hour of Happy Days reruns? Tired. Yeah. You're not renewed. You're not refreshed. You're not restored and ready to go back in the fight. You just killed an hour. That's all you did. Yes, but what if it's educational? You know, well, I watched the History Channel or Discovery Channel, and now I know all the different kinds of sharks in the world. Well, that's interesting. But how does that affect your purpose? When we set aside a Sabbath, a time of rest, it's setting aside 15 minutes a day in prayer, in talking to God, in reading the Scriptures, just to focus our mind for a short time. To remember, okay, whatever else happens today, I know what my real job is. You know, so things don't go well at work. Some days are like that. Doesn't affect what my purpose is. I'll endure it. You know, as most of you are probably aware, the Mesa Fire Department is going through a very difficult time right now. It's not the end of the world. It's very difficult, though. But it doesn't affect my purpose. He withdrew himself from the battle to a place of solitude to refresh himself. And when we can do that, we can refocus our mind, and then we have the greater energy to be able to do what, you know, our purpose is. You know, I struggle with, and I hear people say my dad struggled with, the ability to say no. To be able to say, you know, my plate's full. I can't. And I bet I'm not the only one. But Christ sometimes said, no. I have other responsibilities. Alma said, you know, no, I can't do this anymore. I have a more important job. So being able to say no is extremely important. Doesn't mean we say no all the time, but don't get me wrong. But I want to impress upon your mind the importance of setting aside the time to renew yourself, to remember what's important, to focus our hearts and our minds in that. To truly renew ourselves. You know, in the Joel almost talked about this morning. He's talking about the parable of the sower. I think it was in Luke he was using. Which one did you use? Luke 8. There it is. You know, he talked about in the 14th verse, he talked about, I'll read the verse real quick. It says, "And they which fell among thorns are they which, when they have heard, go forth and are choked with the cares and riches and pleasures of this life and bring no fruit to perfection." You know, he was talking about the pleasures of this world. Talking about how, you know what? There, you know, sin does have some pleasure to it for a season. And that natural, you know, individual is going to choose the M&Ms over the apples or the bananas most of the time. I'm talking about the same 14th verse, but I'm talking about the cares that can choke us out. That we bring no fruit to perfection. My wife and my children can probably attest that I get grumpy I feel like I've got a lot of things to get done and I'm not getting them done, and so I hurry faster, and so it affects my attitude. I'm not bringing fruit to perfection. I'm choking it out. That's something that I have to work on, to be able to do that. And I think it's something we all, throughout our whole life, struggle with. Sometimes we're very strong. We got our focus right, and we're working on we're bearing fruit. And other times we're going cruising along bearing fruit, and all of a sudden, slowly and slowly, we start getting pulled into these responsibilities and obligations, and they start dragging us back down. And if we have to sometimes stop and take a break, saying, "Wait a minute, what am I supposed to? How is this helping me? Is this obligation, this commitment that I've made right here, is that strengthening, or is that helping me with my purpose? Or is it just like TV? Is it just entertainment, a diversion, a waste of time?" Something we have to ask ourselves, each of us. I'd like to turn over to 1 Kings in the 20th chapter for a concluding story, if you will. Everybody knows who King Ahab was? Ahab, king of Israel, not a very nice guy. He was an evil king. Married Jezebel. She was even worse. And then he listened to her. But in some of the battles, when he went out to fight the different enemies of Israel, the Lord blessed him. Why? For Israel's sake. And hoping that, you know, he would go to Ahab and say, "You know what, I'm going to deliver these guys into your hands." And Ahab would go out there and beat them. You know, but he wouldn't give God the glory. He wouldn't repent. Well, after one of these battles, an event occurred that I would like to liken into our lives a bit. The 20th chapter of 1 Kings and the 35th verse says, "And a certain man of the sons of the prophets said unto his neighbor in the word of the Lord, Smite me, I pray thee. And the man refused to smite him. Then said he unto him, Because thou hast not obeyed the voice of the Lord, behold, as soon as thou art departed from me, a lion shall slay thee. And as soon as he was departed from him, a lion found him and slew him." So if anybody says, "Punch me in the nose," do it. Because he may be a prophet. But that's not what I'm getting at. "Then he found another man and said, Smite me, I pray thee. And the man smote him, so that in smiting he wounded him. So the prophet departed and waited for the king by the way and disguised himself with ashes upon his face." Made himself dirty. Looked like he'd been in the battle. "And as the king passed by, he cried unto the king. And he said, Thy servant went out into the midst of the battle. And behold, a man turned aside and brought a man unto me and said, Keep this man. If by any means he be missing, then shall thy life be for his, or else thou shalt pay a talent of silver. So he's saying, I was out in the battle, and this officer came, and he had had this captive, and he gave me an order to say, okay, you guard this captive, and if he gets away, you're responsible. It's either your life or a talent of silver. And he had said this because, you know, right before the battle, God had said, you know what? I'm going to deliver this man into your hand. He's an evil man. The other king is, believe it or not, worse than you. But at the end of the battle, Ahab spared him, and the man rode in his chariot. He spared the man that the Lord had given to him. 40th verse. And as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone. And the king of Israel said unto him, So shall thy judgment be. Thou hast decided it. He said, You know what? Hey, you made the agreement. You just told me that, you know, he got away. It's yours. And he hasted and took the ashes away from his face, and the king of Israel discerned him that he was of the prophets. And he said to him, Thus saith the Lord, because thou hast let go out of thy hand a man whom I appointed to utter destruction, therefore thy life shall go for his life, and thy people for his people. And the king of Israel went to his house heavy and displeased and came to Samaria. Well, that's a lovely story, but what does it have to do with anything? What I want you to do is look at this man who was given a responsibility that he was, you know, he made himself to look like he'd been in the battle, and he said, you know what? I was given this man to take care of. And I got busy doing other stuff, and the man got away. And so the Lord made him accountable for that man. But you know what? That's also us. We've been given a soul, and this soul's been given a life, a body on this earth. And the Lord's saying, okay, here's your man. Take care of him, okay, while I'm gone. And if we get busy doing all this other kind of stuff, we turn around and it's 40 years later, and the man that could have done all these great things is gone. You know? I look in the mirror, I don't see the face of the guy that was in high school with the world in front of him. That man's gone. Can't get him back. That's what God gives us is this life. He says, don't get busy doing things that don't matter. And let it get away from you. Focus on what our purpose is. Focus on doing what we're commanded. Focus on living that gospel, that godly life. And all the commandments that we're given. I hope it's been edifying for you. If I can just have you to remember what is important in life. And to take the time to set aside a personal Sabbath of a certain amount of time a day, or every once in a while just taking a day off or half a day off to focus on God. I think it will be edifying for you spiritually as well.